नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर जॉइनिंग टुडे सेशन। वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम द 9th चैप्टर ऑफ श्रीमद् भगवद गीता। चैप्टर इज टाइटल्ड एज द मोस्ट कॉन्फिडेंशियल नॉलेज और राजगुह्य योग। सो वी स्टार्टेड दिस चैप्टर बाय कृष्ण टेलिंग इदम तु ते गुह्यतमं प्रवक्ष्यामि अनसूयवे ज्ञानम विज्ञान सहितम यद्ज्ञात्वा मोक्षसे अशुभात्। ओ अर्जुन नाउ दैट आई हैव स्पोकन अबाउट कॉन्फिडेंशियल नॉलेज इन द फर्स्ट सिक्स चैप्टर्स, more confidential knowledge in the 7th and 8th chapters which spoke about pradhani bhuta bhakti or predominant bhakti. Now I'm going to speak to you about the most confidential knowledge which is pure devotional service. Why I am speaking to you? Because you are non-envious, you do not have an inimical disposition. That's why. So that's why these teachings of pure devotional service should be spoken to those who are non-envious or non-inimical in nature. Jnanam vijnana sahitam yadgyatva mokshase ashubhat. And this most secret knowledge of bhakti or pure devotional service, along with it you will also know how by practice of this bhakti you can realize me. And knowing this you can become freed from all kinds of suffering. Yadgyatva mokshase ashubhat. And what is the nature, what is this bhakti? He says, राजविद्या राजगुह्यं पवित्रं इदम् उत्तमं प्रत्यक्षावगमं धर्म्यं सुसुखं कर्तुम् अव्ययम्। सो ही सेज दैट दिस भक्ति इज राजविद्या, दिस इज द ऑफ वेरियस टाइप्स ऑफ भक्ति, दिस इज द हाईएस्ट टाइप ऑफ भक्ति एंड द मोस्ट सीक्रेट टाइप ऑफ भक्ति। पवित्रं इदम् उत्तमं, ऑफ ऑल द अदर मेथड्स दिस इज द most purifying method. Pratyakshavagamam, and the results of this bhakti can be directly experienced or realized. Dharmyam, even though the practitioners of devotional service may not follow properly the limbs of varna and ashrama, but nevertheless one should understand that this is dharmyam, this is very much according to dharma, because dharma is practiced according to one's qualification. So for those qualified for bhakti, they are not obliged to perform the rules and regulations of varnashrama as it is. So therefore, even though they may not be seem to be performing what is commonly understood and accepted as dharma, still one should understand that this is dharmyam. Susukam kartum, the limbs of bhakti are very pleasant and easy to perform. So therefore it is very easy, susukam kartum. And avyayam, bhakti is the only process which is indestructible, because it is not within the three modes and it is permanently practiced even after one attains the stage of sadhya or perfection. Generally when perfection is achieved, the practice is given up. But on the practice in bhakti, on the path of bhakti, when perfection is reached, the practice naturally becomes perfection. So it is never given up. So therefore it is avyayam. In this way we saw the nature of this Shuddha Bhakti. But ashraddha dana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa apraapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. But those who do not have faith in this path of bhakti, they do not attain Krishna. But they remain fixed in the path of samsara. So this bhakti, he mentioned that jnanam vijnana sahitam yad gyatva mokshase ashubhat. I will give you knowledge of me, and how by acquiring that knowledge of me you can realize me also I will tell. So knowledge of Krishna starts with understanding how he deals with this material world through the agency of his material energy. So which means his purushavatara leela is the very first aspect, which involves lot of his exhibition of lot of Aishwarya. the Purushavataras, for example, Mahavishnu lying down in the Karana ocean from his bodily pores, millions of universes come out. This is like a very extreme exhibition of Aishwarya. So, and very explicit exhibition of Aishwarya by which no one can actually have any doubts about who is the Supreme Personality of God and what are his powers and everything. Very explicit exhibition. Okay. This is for those who need such kind of an explicit exhibition to actually understand and accept the Supreme Lord. So therefore, Paramatma realization is a very preliminary realization. So Paramatma realization means what? Paramatma realization means realizing that the Lord has pastimes with respect to this, to the creation, maintenance and destruction of this material world. Understanding the Lord to have a form and pastimes, but mostly with respect to this material world. That is Paramatma realization. So, Krishna's Aishwarya is described first. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina mastani sarva bhutani nachaham tesho avasthitaha. So, he says that I pervade this whole universe by my form, which is invisible to ordinary senses. In the form of Paramatma, he pervades this whole universe, but the Paramatma form is invisible to ordinary senses. Matstani sarvabhutani nachaham tesho avasthitaha. All living entities are situated in me because I am their cause and I am their protector. But I am not in them in the sense that I am completely detached. Nachamatstani bhutani pashyame yogamaishwaram. Bhutabrin nachabhutasto mamatma bhutabhavanah. And the living entities are not in me. See this inconceivable power of my body. Pashyame yogamaishwaram. So he says that why it is inconceivable? Because in this material world, no one protects or take care of anything without attachment. There must be some attachment somewhere. So without attachment, no one protects. So, but Krishna, or if someone is the cause of something, whatever they have created, definitely there is a sense of attachment to it. But in the case of Krishna, Krishna is completely detached. Therefore, he says, Pashyame Yogamaishwaram. This is the inconceivable power of my body. My mind is not in them, even though I maintain them and protect them. So in this material world, whatever someone is maintaining or protecting, they definitely have attachment. But Krishna is calling this as Pashyame Yoga Maishwaram. See this mystic potency of mind. So what Krishna is not talking about, look, I am one person and millions of universes are coming from my bodily pores. This is mystical. No. In Krishna's perspective, there is nothing so mystical about this. The real mysticism is in detachment. So, Krishna says that this is real. The really mystical thing is my detachment. Even though I maintain and protect millions of universes, still, I am detached from them. And this is what is really mystical. Otherwise, from a small body, small things come out. Some dirt comes out, some sweat comes out. From a big body, big things may come out. So according to Krishna, this is not such a seriously mystical thing. The real mysticism is in detachment. Whatever someone maintains or protects, no one maintains or protects anything without having some kind of attachment to that. But in Krishna, this is mystical. And he explains this. Yata akasha stito nityam vayur sarvatra go mahan tata sarvani bhutani mastani tyupadare. ಈ ಒಂದು ದ ಈಥರ್ ಸಪೋರ್ಟ್ಸ್ ದ ವಿಂಡ್, ಈವನ್ ದೋ ಇಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಕಂಪ್ಲೀಟ್ಲಿ ಡಿಟ್ಯಾಚ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ದ ವಿಂಡ್. ಈಥರ್ ಸಪೋರ್ಟ್ಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಮೇಂಟೈನ್ಸ್ ದ ವಿಂಡ್ ಬೈ ಅಲವಿಂಗ್ ಇಟ್, ಬೈ ಗಿವಿಂಗ್ ಇಟ್ ಅ ಸ್ಪೇಸ್ ಟು ಮೂವ್ ಅರೌಂಡ್. ಸಿಮಿಲರ್ಲಿ, ಬಟ್ ಈವನ್ ದೋ ಇಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಕಂಪ್ಲೀಟ್ಲಿ ಡಿಟ್ಯಾಚ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ದ ವಿಂಡ್. ಸಿಮಿಲರ್ಲಿ, ಈವನ್ ದೋ ಐ ಮೇಂಟೈನ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಪ್ರೊಟೆಕ್ಟ್ ದ ಯೂನಿವರ್ಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ದ ಲಿವಿಂಗ್ ಎಂಟಿಟೀಸ್, ಬಟ್ ಸ್ಟಿಲ್ ಐ ಆಮ್ ಕಂಪ್ಲೀಟ್ಲಿ ಡಿಟ್ಯಾಚ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಇಟ್. ಸೊ ಸಮನ್ ಮೇ ಸೇ, ಓ ಯು ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಸೆಡ್ ಲುಕ್ ಅಟ್ ದಿಸ್ ಪಶ್ಯಮೇ ಯೋಗಮ ಐಶ್ವರಂ, ಲುಕ್ ಅಟ್ ದಿಸ್ ಇನ್ಕನ್ಸೀವಬಲ್ ಮಿಸ್ಟಿಕ್ ಪೊಟೆನ್ಸಿ ಆಫ್ ಮೈಂಡ್. ಸೊ ನೌ ದಟ್ ಯು ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಗಿವನ್ ಅನ್ ಎಕ್ಸಾಂಪಲ್ ಟು ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪ್ಲೈನ್ ದಿಸ್, ಹೌ ಇಸ್ ಇಟ್ ಸೋ ಮಿಸ್ಟಿಕಲ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಇನ್ಕನ್ಸೀವಬಲ್? ಹಿ ಸೇಸ್, ಲುಕ್, ಈಥರ್ ಇಸ್ ಇನನಿಮೇಟ್, ವಿಂಡ್ ಇಸ್ ಇನನಿಮೇಟ್. Inanimate things by nature do not have any attachment. So even though ether is supporting and maintaining the wind, but it is not attached, not, and there is nothing mystical about it, because the ether is anyway inanimate. But amongst animate conscious living entities, you will never see any conscious living entity maintaining or supporting something or someone with absolute detachment. It is not at all seen. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. All the living entities are conscious. Show me one living entity which is maintaining and protecting some other living entity or some object or some place or some wealth with absolute detachment. This is never seen. So therefore, even though I have given an example of ether and wind to establish, to explain my sense of detachment, but still it remains inconceivable, because this kind of a detachment is not seen in conscious living entities. Therefore, it is Pashyame Yogam Aishwaram. Then he continues, ಸರ್ವಭೂತಾನಿ ಕೌಂತೇಯ ಪ್ರಕೃತಿಂ ಯಾಂತಿ ಮಾಮಿಕಾಂ ಕಲ್ಪಕ್ಷಯೇ ಪುನಸ್ತಾನಿ ಕಲ್ಪಾದೌ ವಿಸೃಜಾಮ್ಯಹಂ. ಓ ಅರ್ಜುನ, ಅಟ್ ದ ಟೈಮ್ ಆಫ್ ಡಿಸ್ಟ್ರಕ್ಷನ್ ಎವ್ರಿಥಿಂಗ್ ಎಂಟರ್ಸ್ ಇನ್ ಟು ಮೀ, ಅಂಡ್ ಅಟ್ ದ ಟೈಮ್ ಆಫ್ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಷನ್ ಐ ಅಗೈನ್ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಟ್ ಎವ್ರಿಥಿಂಗ್. ಸೊ ಐ ಆಮ್ ದಿ ಐ ಡೋಂಟ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಮೇಂಟೈನ್, ಬಟ್ ಐ ಆಮ್ ದ ಸೋರ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಷನ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಡಿಸ್ಟ್ರಕ್ಷನ್ ಆಲ್ಸೋ. ಪ್ರಕೃತಿಂ ಸ್ವಾಮ್ ಅವಷ್ಟಭ್ಯ ವಿಸೃಜಾಮಿ ಪುನಃ ಪುನಃ ಭೂತಗ್ರಾಮಂ ಇವಂ ಕೃತ್ಸ್ನಂ ಅವಶಂ ಪ್ರಕೃತಿರ್ವಶಾತ್. So, being situated in Prakriti, I create again and again all the living entities who are all dependent and being under the control of their natures caused by their previous actions. Every living entity manifests with particular bodies according to their karma and swabhava, which they acquired in their previous lives. ನಚಮಾಂ ತಾನಿ ಕರ್ಮಾಣಿ ನಿಬದ್ಧಂತಿ ಧನಂಜಯ ಉದಾಸೀನವದಾಸೀನಂ ಅಸಕ್ತಂ ತೇಷು ಕರ್ಮಶು. ಸೊ ಈವನ್ ದೋ ಐ ಎಂಗೇಜ್ ಇನ್ ಸೋ ಮೆನಿ ಸಚ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್, ಬಟ್ ಐ ಆಮ್ ನಾಟ್ ಬೌಂಡ್ ಬೈ ಎನಿ ಸಚ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್, ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಐ ಆಮ್ ಇನ್ಡಿಫರೆಂಟ್. ಸೊ ಯು ನೋ ಐ ಆಮ್ ಸಿಚುವೇಟೆಡ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಎನ್ ಉದಾಸೀನವದಾಸೀನಂ, ಐ ಆಮ್ ಸಿಚುವೇಟೆಡ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಎನ್ ಇನ್ಡಿಫರೆಂಟ್ ಪಾರ್ಟಿ ಅನ್ಅಟ್ಯಾಚ್ ಟು ಎನಿ ಆಫ್ ದೀಸ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿವಿಟೀಸ್. ಬಿಕಾಸ್ bondage comes due to attachment to activities. I am unattached to any of these activities, therefore there is no bondage in my case. Okay. So, and then he says, maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam hetunanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. By my direction as Karanodaka Sai Vishnu, ಪ್ರಕೃತಿ ಗಿವ್ಸ್ ರೈಸ್ ಟು ದಿಸ್ ಮೂವಿಂಗ್ ಅಂಡ್ ನಾನ್ ಮೂವಿಂಗ್ ಯೂನಿವರ್ಸ್, ನಾನ್ ಮೂವಿಂಗ್ ಲಿವಿಂಗ್ ಎಂಟಿಟೀಸ್. ಸೊ ಪ್ರಕೃತಿ ಇಸ್ ನಾಟ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ಇಂಡಿಪೆಂಡೆಂಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಮೈ ಎಂಪವರ್ಮೆಂಟ್, ಆರ್ ಮೆಟೀರಿಯಲ್ ನೇಚರ್ ಇಸ್ ನಾಟ್ ಆಕ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ಇಂಡಿಪೆಂಡೆಂಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಮೈ ಎಂಪವರ್ಮೆಂಟ್. ಬೈ ಮೈ ಎಂಪವರ್ಮೆಂಟ್ ಪ್ರಕೃತಿ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಟ್ಸ್ ದ ಮೂವಿಂಗ್ ಅಂಡ್ ನಾನ್ ಮೂವಿಂಗ್ ಎಂಟಿಟೀಸ್. ಅಂಡ್ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಮೈ ಎಂಪವರ್ಮೆಂಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಪ್ರಕೃತಿ, ದಿ ಯೂನಿವರ್ಸಸ್ ಅಪಿಯರ್ ಅಗೇನ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಅಗೇನ್. Without my glands, Prakriti does not get the empowerment to itself manifest a functional universe. Okay. Then he says that, but even though I am the creator, maintainer, destroyer, everything, but avajananti ma mooda manushim tanum ashritam parambhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. There are two meanings given to this verse. One meaning is that that yes, Krishna, you are, even though you say that you create, you maintain, you destroy, even though the Purushavataras only do it. So we understand that these Purushavataras are your amshas or expansions. But some people say that you are an avatara of the Purushavataras. You expand from the Purushavataras. Some people say like that. So why? Because you come in a normal human form with only two hands, but the Purushavataras are huge and you have a Madhya Makara form. Whereas the Karanadakasai Vishnu, you see, he is lying in the Karana ocean, such a huge form, four hands, millions of universes emanating from his body. You just have a medium-sized form. So they say that you are an avatara of Karanadakasai Vishnu, that Purusha. This is one understanding of this verse. So avajananti ma mooda. Foolish people who do not know the proper conclusions of the Shastras, they deride me as what is deriding Krishna. Deriding Krishna means calling that calling Krishna as a mere avatara of Karanadakasai Vishnu. This is deriding. So fools deride me, even though I am the Lord of all beings. Manushim tanumashritam. When I come in this absolutely human looking form with just two hands and a medium sized form, when I appear in this form, people deride me by calling me just as an one ordinary avatar of the Purusha, of Karanadakasai Vishnu. What they do not know, mama parambhava majananto, they do not know that I am the source of everything. Yadadvaitam brahmopanishadi tadapyasya tanubha ya atma antaryami purushah tadapi asya amsha vibhavah shadaishwarya purno yaiha bhagavan sa swayamayam na chaitanyat krishna jagati paratatvam paramiha. As in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is talking about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but this is equally applicable to Krishna also. You know, what the Upanishads call as Brahman is only tadapi asya tanubha. It is only a bodily effulgence of this personality. Ya atma antaryami purushah. And that which the Shastras talk about the antaryami or the purushavataras, asya amsha vibhavah. Those purushavataras, including Karanadakasai Vishnu, are just an expansion of this personality. Shadaishwarya purno yeha bhagavan sa swayamayam. That which the scriptures talk about the Shadaishwarya purna bhagavan, that is he himself. Like that. So, but not only is Krishna that, but he is the source of all the other bhagavan features who appear as, various avatars. He is swayam bhagavan. But avajananti ma mooda, those who do not know the proper conclusions, when he comes in a medium-sized form, exactly looking like a human being with just two hands, people think that he is just an avatara. Mama parambhavam ajananto, not knowing that I am the great lord of the Brahman, higher than all other manifestations, they misjudge me in this way out of foolishness. This is one understanding of this verse. Another understanding of this verse is, avajananti maam mooda manushin tanum ashritam. When I come in a human-like form, people think that this form is just like any other human body made of earth, water, fire, air and ether. Mama parambhava majananto. Not understanding the transcendental nature of my of my body, they think that when I come in a human-like form, my body is also just like any other human being's body. Like that they think. So this is the second understanding. Okay, but both are wrong. Neither is Krishna an avatara of the Purusha avataras, nor is Krishna's body material or human. So if one has such an understanding, then what happens? Mogasha mogakarmano mogajnana vichetasa rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shrita. If one considers Krishna's body to be material and perishable, just like ordinary human being's body, then moga asha. If devotees think in this way, then their aspiration to attain the transcendental abode of the Lord will be, it will become a failure. They cannot attain. And if the karmis have such an understanding about the Supreme Lord's body, if they consider it to be material, moga karmanu means they do not attain the material food fruits that they are aspiring after. Moga jnana, meaning the jnanis who are aspiring after liberation. So moga, moha means illusion. Moga means it will be a failure. Their endeavor to attain liberation through the process of jnana will be a failure. The karmis endeavor to get some material benefits through their path of karma will be a failure. The devotees endeavor to attain the spiritual world through their practice of bhakti will be a failure if they refuse to accept the form of the Supreme Lord to be transcendental. So, instead, rakshasim asurim chaiva mohinim prakritim shrita. They assume the nature of the rakshasas and the asuras, which means rather they degrade into rajoguni and tamoguni natures. They develop rajoguni and tamoguni natures. That's what it means. On the contrary, mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadi mavyayam. On the other hand, what does it take to understand the true transcendental nature of Krishna's body? He says, Mahatma, fortune. Mahatma means fortunate souls. Those souls who are fortunate to have had the association of devotees through whom they could accumulate some sukriti which matured into Shraddha in pure devotional service, such people are called as Mahatmas. So, Mahatmas are fortunate souls. Okay. So, it takes fortune. It does not take just material intelligence, some kind of intelligence to understand Krishna's body is transcendental. They need to have faith. That faith comes from association of devotees. Okay. So, if they are fortunate enough to get that association of devotees, what do they do? Daivim prakritim ashritaha. Then they develop the daivi prakriti, means divine nature. What is divine nature? Vishnu bhakta smrito daiva asuras tad viparyaya. The nature to worship Krishna, that is divine nature. So, daivim prakritim ashritaha means they take shelter of a nature which inspires them to worship Krishna. Daivim prakritim ashritaha. And by that nature, what do? Bhajanti. They worship. What is the nature of that worship? Ananya manaso. Ananya manasa means their mind is not given to the path of karma, jnana, yoga. Or their mind is not, or a part of their mind is not given to the worship of the demigods. Ananya manaso. Bhajanti ananya manaso means they worship with one-pointed attention, without being distracted by the path of karma, jnana, yoga, or without being distracted to worship any other form of Brahman, Paramatma, or even the demigod. Bhutadim Avyayam. And such people, they worship Gyatva Bhuta Adim. They understand that my human-like body is ultimately the cause of everything. It is the source of everything. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. They know this. Avyayam. And that this body is not material, but it is spiritual and therefore it is indestructible. So therefore, fortunate souls worship me. But those who do not have such fortune are described here as Mudha. Mudha means foolish. Why they are foolish? Because they are not fortunate enough to develop that Sukriti by which they develop the faith in these literatures which glorify, which talk about bhakti. They are not fortunate enough to get the association of devotees through which they get faith in the path of bhakti. Therefore, they are Mooda. They are foolish because they don't have faith in the pramana through which they can accumulate that knowledge. Why they don't have faith? Because they were not fortunate enough to come in the association of devotees. So this is where we ended our discussion. Of course, last week we could not have because I was traveling. But the week before that, this is where we ended. So now we are going to continue our discussion further. But before we continue our discussion further, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add, you can please go ahead right now before we start today's discussion. Anything based on whatever we have recapped today, or anything based on whatever we discussed in the previous class, we can take now. Yes, Sri Vidya Madhusudan.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. So I'm a little confused with that explanation of Krishna's detachment to this material world, like Mastani, Sarvabhutani, Pashyami, Yogameshwaram, all this Krishna says. And he's trying to prove that he's, detached from all the material affairs of the world. But in actually, we see that, he's spread as, different types of avatars. So he comes down again as Yugavatara. So many things to protect people and, to give protection to his devotees. And he's there everywhere, right? And he is worried when his, when, I mean, he, He incarnates to bring the souls back to his own abode. All these things are there. Then, how do we actually, or how does Krishna say that he is detached? I mean, that point I'm not able to understand because generally, the person who's so very responsible and doing taking care of everything. So, but what is wrong in being detached, or how can we say that? I mean, not, what is wrong in being attached, or how can you say that is detached? I'm sorry, I was not able to get the point.
Yeah. So that is why in the material world, one who is detached cannot be responsible. But when it comes to Krishna, he takes all the responsibility. In fact, he never fails in his responsibility. Being so responsible, he is detached. So detachment means what? Detachment means he is not really affected personally when there is a mismanagement of this universe. Of course, he responsibly ensures that there is no mismanagement, but he is not affected if something goes wrong. And also, he does not personally do it, he only deputes it. Because anything you are attached to, You would want to personally do it. Whatever you depute, you are not attached to it. So Krishna, deputes this material, functioning or the functioning of this material universe to his energies. And he's not personally so much involved. So that indicates his detachment. So now the question is, why does Krishna descend then in the form of avatars? This question arises. If he is so detached, why should he descend as avatars? So now my question back to you is that, okay, he does descend. So by descending, what does he accomplish? Why does he descend?
अपरित्राणाय साधूनां पिदाशाय चतुष्कृतां हि सेवे
Correct.
तदा
So, Paritranaya Sadhunam. So, the explanation of Paritranaya Sadhunam means the devotees are experiencing the pain of separation from him. So, in order to deliver the devotees from that pain of separation, he comes. So, now you may say, oh, here is attachment. Yes, Krishna is attached to the devotees. Why? Why is Krishna attached to the devotees? What is it that the devotees possess that the non-devotees not possess?
They have their love for Krishna, they understand Krishna, they love Krishna,
Yeah,
they want to help
they
Krishna.
have bhakti. And bhakti is Krishna's, bhakti is a part of Krishna's antaranga shakti. It's his internal energy. So what he is really attached to is bhakti. So bhakti is not of this material world. Okay. So now one may say, oh, but Bhagavatam says that he performs his pastimes so that other people bhajate tadrishi kreeda yashrutva tatparo bhavet, Bhagavatam says. So while he descends in this material world, he performs pastimes in order to attract common people towards his pastimes. So now, without attachment, why would he do it? Now, again, when he performs this, what is the understanding? The understanding is that seeing these pastimes, the living entities will get attracted and they will become qualified to receive Krishna Bhakti. And Krishna Bhakti is being a part of Krishna's Antaranga Shakti. Therefore, again, this performing of pastimes to attract common people is so that they come under the control of his Antaranga Shakti. So, still there is detachment only. There is detachment from matter. But there is attachment to the living entities taking up to his Antaranga Shakti. So, therefore, there is detachment only.
So just as we say, like in this world also great people like our Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, they are attached to the they are attached to the soul or not the body, right? They take care of the soul. So same way like Krishna is attached to the Antaranga Shakti, which means the bhakti part of the people of the Jivas, right? That's what
Yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
means. I'm permitted to ask one more question. Just wanted to understand from this Antavattu Palankesha, right? This one. I mean, sorry, Avajananti
Yeah.
Mamuda, that's where he was discussing. So, like Avajananti Mamuda, just, I mean, of course, first time I'm hearing from this one, right? So, derived, so he talks about even those who understand that he's the incarnation of Purushavatara, he is not the original avatari, he's the incarnation of Purushavatara. So he calls them also as Muda, right? That's what is being told here.
Here in the sense, unaware. So if you are unaware of a particular thing, then you are Muda. And the moment you become aware, you are no longer a Muda. So he is not addressing Muda in the sense they are eternally Mudas. but they are unaware of this particular conclusion. In that sense, they are moda, not knowledgeable, because they don't have that knowledge, therefore they are moda.
So, but in this case, probably so whereas he mentioned that like Bhagavatam, we have Krishna through Bhagavan Swayam. It said that Krishna is the original source of everything. But here, he is talking about, you know, this opulence, Mastani, Sarva Bhutani, all this, you know, when he says, it's all about this expansion, right? Karno Data, Sai Vishnu, in terms of his expansion, but he has not yet established that this 200 form is the original cause, is the original, cause of all these incarnations, is the cause of everything that is happening. Sarva Karna Karan, he has not spoken till now in Bhagavad Gita. Then at this stage, how would somebody understand that Krishna's 200 form is the highest, and how can one come out of that Buddha stage?
He is not talking about those people who are hearing Bhagavad Gita. He is talking in general about people. Even amongst the theistic people who accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is an information that he is giving to Arjuna. Oh Arjuna, even amongst theistic people, not everyone knows the transcendental nature of me completely. So it's not that they are not expected to know it based on whatever he has spoken till now in Bhagavad Gita. But what he is telling is, in general, even amongst people who accept God, who are theistic people, even amongst them, people do not know that, people think that I am an avatara, but I am the source of all the Purusha avataras also, like that he is telling. So it's not based on what he has taught till now in Bhagavad Gita. So he is in general talking about people.
So that's why it's called more confidential also, this knowledge. So,
yeah.
I think thank you. Thank you.
Okay. There is another question in the chat box. Some people worship Krishna, but if they are not inclined to accept Guru and surrender to him, so are they also under Daivim Prakritim Ashritaha? Okay. So now, Bhajanti Ananya Manaso. So even though he has not described the aspects of devotion, devotion starts with Adav Guru Padashraya. One may not have accepted a guru yet, but one should be very clear that I need a guru for my progress on the path of devotional service. They may not yet have identified their guru, or even if they have identified, they might not have been formally initiated. But having said that, if one thinks that, oh, I don't need a guru, I don't need the association of devotees to worship Krishna, if one thinks like that, that kind of faith in Krishna and in bhakti is actually sentimental faith. Such people are not considered to be Daivim Prakritim Ashrita, because they have not really understood the transcendental nature of Krishna. Because Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Jaivadharma, he says, understanding the transcendental nature of Krishna parallelly comes with understanding the transcendental nature of Guru and Vaishnavas. So if one has faith in worshipping the deities, but if one does not have a willingness to worship and serve the Vaishnavas and Guru, then that kind of attachment to the deities is actually material. That is not at all transcendental, and that faith is not considered to be transcendental faith. So, if one is unconvinced of taking shelter of Guru and Vaishnavas, then that is not actually, that is not you can say transcendental, such people are not considered to be Daivim Prakritim Ashrita, those who have taken shelter of Daivi Prakriti. But having said that, you may have people or devotees who agree that yes, I have to eventually take shelter of a guru, but I have not found one. I have not been able to choose my guru. But I am very clear. I need guru to progress on the path of devotional service. There may be people like that. So such people are, yes, they fall within the category of Daivim Prakriti Mashrita. But if someone thinks, oh, I don't need a guru, and so like that, then that is not. Okay, next question. Krishna's form is Sachidananda. At the same time, he descends in a form that can be perceived through our senses. Now, how can his human form be understood as his original form when the purpose of his appearance in the human form itself is for the human form itself is for the purpose that it can be perceived through material senses? Now who said that the purpose of okay, now I want you to answer so you can please unmute yourself. Now, who said the purpose of his appearance in human form is so that it can be perceived through material senses?
Okay, so Prabhu, because Krishna is spiritual, is it not true that his form has to be perceived through our senses, right, Prabhu? That's what I mean. Maybe not human form. When we speak of the vigrahas, this Acharya's commentary is that because his form is spiritual, he comes in the form of vigraha because so that it can be perceived through our senses. So,
So that makes a vigraha material.
no, Prabhu, does not make material, but I'm trying to understand when that purpose itself is to be able to be perceived through our senses, how is that equated with the Sachit Ananda form, which is what the spiritual form's definition is, what my question, Prabhu.
Okay, so now my question to you is, there is a presumption in your question. What is that presumption? So, okay, yeah, what is the presumption?
Okay, yeah, I am getting your question. I think the presumption is the spiritual Sachidananda cannot be a human form, is the presumption, I think.
I think your presumption is, correct me if I am wrong, your presumption is material forms cannot be perceived through, transcendental forms cannot be perceived through material vision. That is
True.
your presumption.
That's correct, Prabhu. Especially
Correct?
that. Especially that our bodies are all material here in this world, and its form is human form.
Yeah. So any, whatever human form we have seen, that is material only.
Material, exactly. Right, Prabhu. What you said is correct. Yes, that's the presumption. Yes.
So whatever human form that I have seen is material.
Material.
So these are presumptions. Okay. Krishna is all powerful. If Krishna wants, if you accept Krishna to be all powerful, can't he allow our senses to perceive transcendental form? Okay. So ultimately, see here, you can't accept half-hand logic. Okay? You have to either completely reject Shabda and accept only Pratyaksha Praman, or you have to accept Shabda Praman. So you cannot half accept Shabda and half accept Pratyaksha. Whenever it is convenient, you will accept Pratyaksha. Whenever convenient, you will accept Shabda. Whenever not convenient, you will accept only Pratyaksha. It's not like that. So when Krishna says that my form is original, okay, then the question is, what is an acceptable pramana for you? So you tell me, because ultimately your acceptance of matter cannot perceive spirit. That something like spirit even exists. Isn't all of that based on Shabda Praman only? If all of that you are willing to accept using Shabda Praman, then why should it be difficult when Krishna says that my form in the human form is the source of all the other forms? So why should it be a problem to accept? Because anyway, you have accepted, you are willing to accept Shabda Praman as the Praman. If Shabda Praman is a Praman, then when Krishna says something you will accept, something you will not accept, how you can how can that be acceptable? So when Krishna says my 200 form is the original form, just like you accept the existence of soul, how it animates the body, how it is different from the body, the existence of the transcendental absolute truth, is having three features, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So many things you have accepted based on Shabda Praman. Why should you not accept this? Why should you ask for a logical explanation for this? So, I mean, logic is there, but you are expecting a pratyaksha-based logic. When we are talking about Shabda Praman, where is the question of pratyaksha-based logic? So when Krishna says, so it is not that, see, even material things, there are so many things which we cannot perceive. That does not make it transcendental, isn't it? So many frequencies our ears cannot access. And the ultraviolet, infrared things we cannot see. So, and similarly, so many things, we cannot perceive through our material senses. Not everything material is also perceivable through our material senses. So that which is non-perceivable through material senses does not automatically become spiritual. And it's not that spiritual things cannot be perceived by material senses. The principle is, if Krishna allows, anything can happen. That is the ultimate principle. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo na medaya na bahuna shruten. Yamaivesha vrunute tena labhyas tasyesha atma vivrunute tanum swam. So if Krishna allows a living entity to perceive, one can perceive. So it's not that matter cannot perceive spirit. If Krishna allows, anything can happen. So therefore it is not impossible, and Krishna allows for a particular purpose. So when he descends in his deity form, he allows the living entities to perceive it. But different living entities perceive the deity form according to their consciousness. The Kanishadhikari perceives the deity form with Jadamaya vision, Jada Buddhi. The Madhyamadhikari, he perceives the deity form and the holy name, etc., with Manomaya vision. Whereas the Uttamadhikari perceives the deity form with Shuddha Chinmaya vision. So even though they are perceiving the same object, but they are not perceiving in the same way. They are perceiving different things depending on their consciousness. So Krishna has allowed the deity form to be perceived by all three adhikaris, but all three are not seeing the same thing. Okay. So that way, based on the consciousness, a person who is very qualified, he can see the transcendence in that transcendental form. Right? Like that. But some aspects of spirit, Krishna may not allow access to common people. But some aspects he may allow access. But he will allow them to see, but he will not allow them to see what a Uttamadhikari is seeing. So that way, vision is there. But at the same time, based on the evolution of consciousness, they will start seeing the transcendental aspect of it more and more and more. Like that.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Okay, Kesho Priyamani.
Hare Krishna, President Vatpranam. So, just now we were discussing about the
devotees who don't believe in having a guru, but they have strong faith in Krishna. You are explaining, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, that faith, you said you called it a sentimental faith. So I just want to know, of the nine stages of bhakti, Prabhuji, it starts from Shraddha, and even before Shraddha, it is Satang Kripa and Makat Seva, no, Prabhuji. Then sufficient, after sufficient Ajnata Shikriti, only Shraddha itself starts. So for these people, they wouldn't have undergone those two stages, is it, Prabhuji?
No, they might have undergone those two stages, but it may not have
Okay.
come to the stage of complete threshold where it transforms into proper Shastriya Shraddha.
Oh,
They
but
might have some 25%, 50%, 75% Sukriti also they may have.
oh, so Satan Kripa has to be done for them also, no, Prabhuji. Like, though they say that they don't want guru, but some amount, I just want to understand. Even the sentimental faith one has on Krishna, it can be one can get only through these, through Satang Kripa and
Not
Magat Seva, is
necessarily.
it?
Not
Oh, that's
necessarily.
the point. Is it
No.
on something on mental speculation like that also, Prabhuji?
They saw someone else worshipping the deity. They liked it. So they thought, oh, I will also worship Vishnu. Or through some hereditary practices,
Oh.
they got that attachment to worshipping the deity. But it is not based on Shastras.
So not all devotees throughout the world who worship Krishna, they may not fall in this Satang Kripa, Magat Seva, Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, these stages, Prabhuji.
Not necessarily.
May
No.
not necessarily. Okay, but then they are, what will be their destination, Prabhuji? How will like they will progress? Because they having some or the other, whether sentimental or through Shastric, they like Krishna, they start admiring Krishna, no, Prabhuji. So
If
what
they
will
are
be the,
fortunate enough to come in touch with pure practicing devotees and get proper Sukriti, and if that sentimental faith matures into proper Shastric faith, through the association of devotees, only then there is some fortune.
Oh,
Otherwise,
other just a pious activity, is it, Prabhuji? It will be ordinary, normal pious activity,
it
is it?
may just be some kind of material piety, that's all.
Oh, okay, Prabhuji. Thank you for your correction.
Okay, one more question. When Narada Muni saw the Lord in Shvetadvip, Lord said, "You are seeing my form due to my mercy. I don't think that my form is material, even if you are able to see it now." Yeah, true. Correct. Yes. When the Lord wants, he can allow anyone to see his form. Yes, Shyam.
हरे कृष्णा प्रभु जी, दंडवत प्रणाम। हाँ प्रभु जी, हरि बोल।
यस
प्रभु जी, इन 13 बेस्ड वन फॉलो अप क्वेश्चन दैट समबडी इफ सीज द डीटी वर्शिपिंग और हियर्स अबाउट द लॉर्ड, ही दैट पर्सन आल्सो स्टार्ट्स प्रैक्टिसिंग समथिंग लाइक वर्शिपिंग एंड ऑल दैट, बट देयर फेथ इज नॉट एज पर सताम कृपा। सो समवेयर इन 13.26 इन भगवद गीता it is said that those who worship me, who are not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. So,
Gradually,
great.
gradually.
Means they will get Satam Kripa and they will have faith, and all that stages will come, and then when it will happen.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, Prabhu. Thank you.
Okay. If there are no further discussion points, questions, or comments, we will now start today's discussion. Okay. So now, in the previous verse, he says, Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashritaha bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. But the fortunate souls who have been fortunate enough to come in touch with my devotees and attain some Ajnata Sukriti by which they develop faith in worshipping me, they worship my human form without any distractions. Bhajanti ananya manaso. Okay. Understanding, knowing that my human like body is the cause of all things, it is indestructible and it is fully spiritual. By understanding this. So now what is this Bhajanti Ananya Manasu? What is worshipping Krishna without any distraction? So this he describes in the next verse. So he says, Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridabrataha namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate satatam mam upasate. They worship me at all times. So he uses the word satatam. So now my question to you, how many of you heard the recent Bhagavatam class that I gave at Chowpatty? Please raise your hands. Because there I have, the whole session was about satatam. You know, how do you understand at all times? Satatam means what? You know, that whole discussion was about that. And of course, so six devotees have raised your hands. You can put your hands down. Seven devotees have raised your hands. Okay, eight. Okay, more. More devotees are raising their hands. So now, my another question to you, please put your hands down. Apart from those who raised your hands, those who have already raised your hands, you need not raise your hands. Amongst those who did not raise your hands, how many of you managed to hear the at least the first two sessions of Are You Sure Your Bhakti is Pure seminar? You know, the workshop. Please raise your hands. Okay. At least few of you are raising. I know few of you did, but you have not yet raised your hands. Some of you, like Mother Gail, she had attended it. So, anyways. So the point is here, satatam does not mean every single moment. So, satatam means possessing a consistent, constant faith. So, satatam does not necessarily mean that one at every single moment there is engagement in Krishna's service using one's senses or mind. That is not the meaning of that. Satatam means consistent, regular, regulated. That does not mean every single moment, because such a thing would be impossible to practice in sadhana bhakti. And if the shastras are recommending something which is impossible, people may lose faith. So Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami, in his commentary in that verse, Smartavya Satatam Vishno Vismartavyona Jatuchit. One should always remember Krishna, one should never forget him. In that particular verse, explaining the meaning of the word satatam, he says here, satatam means every day and not every second. And he says, if it was every second, then it would be impossible for a sadhaka to follow. And if it is impossible for him to follow, he will lose faith in the tenets of bhakti. So one should understand, satatam means every day. And satatam also means that even when the sadhaka is not directly engaged in Krishna's service, still that willingness to engage consistently is there. So satatam meaning continuous means there is the goal of prema. That is continuous. The willingness to engage continuously is continuous. The faith in the path of pure devotional service is continuous. Even though engagement may be discontinuous. Even though engagement, actual engagement may be discontinuous, but actually continuous means the goal is continuous, consistent. Willingness to engage continuously is consistent. The faith in pure devotional service is consistent, even though the actual engagement may not be continuous. That is what is called as anishtita bhajana kriya. Anishtita bhajana kriya means unsteady devotional service, unsteady devotional practice. That is anishtita bhajana kriya. Okay. So, anishtita bhajana kriya is also very much a part of sadhana bhakti, and sadhana bhakti is very much a part of uttama bhakti. Okay. Anyways, those of this is just a a recap of those for those who have already heard that Bhagavatam class. But what I discussed in that Bhagavatam class was was already discussed in those four sessions where of that are you sure your bhakti is pure discussion. Okay. So now they worship me at all times. Satatam mam upasate. They worship me at all times. Bhaktya with devotion. And what is the nature of that worship? Worship means what? So he says, Kirtayanto, in the form of singing about me, Drida Vrataha, following some strict vows which are actually recommended in the Bhakti Shastra, not whimsical vows. Nitya Yukta, desiring to be my associate. And Yatantaha, wandering about to gain association. Yatantaha means they are wandering about. They go from one place to another place to another place. You know. Because they want association. During weekends, they go to the temple. Why? Because they want association. During the week, they may go to counseling meeting. Why? Because they want association. And yatantaha also means endeavoring. So, or they may open their phone or laptop to connect via Zoom. Why? For association. Yatantaha. How do you identify such people? Satatam mam upasate. They worship me at all times. Bhaktya, with devotion. And what is the nature of that bhakti? Kirtayanto. In the form of singing about me. Dridavrataha, having strict vows. Nitya Yukta, desiring to be my associates. Yatantaha, wandering about to gain association. Namasyantascha mam bhaktya. And namasyantaha means offering obeisances or offering respects unto me. Cha bhaktya. And other devotional acts. Which are the 64 limbs which are described. So, this is the nature of, in the previous verse, Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakriti mashrita bhajanti ananya manaso. What is the meaning of bhajanti ananya manaso? This is what it means. They worship Krishna at all times with devotion in the form of singing about Krishna, following strict vows which are recommended by the Bhakti Shastras, desiring to become an associate of Krishna, performing all endeavors to gain association of Krishna's devotees, offering all respects to Krishna, and as well performing other devotional activities. So this is actually worship of this is actually, he is explaining what did he say in the previous verse? Mahatma bhajanti ananya manasu. What is the meaning of bhajanti ananya manasu? This is what it means. So here Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, In the last verse, it was mentioned that they worship me. What type of worship do they perform? Okay. So satatam, you see here, this is a beautiful explanation of satatam. Okay. Let's see, because we discussed satatam from a few verses in our morning Bhagavatam class. Here also the word satatam comes with respect to worship. Let us see if there is any consistency. Otherwise, whatever I have presented, you should reject. Because only I have taken a few verses which may support my conclusion. So now this is another place where the word satatam is used with respect to worshipping Krishna. Let us see if there is any consistency in the explanations that we saw in that Bhagavatam class. Let's see what here Srila Vishwanatha Chakradhakur says. He says, they worship always satatam, not as in karma yoga, which is dependent on a suitable time, place, person and purity for its execution. Which means, so here satatam means a devotee does not think, oh, this is not the right time to chant. Oh, this is not the right place to remember Krishna. Oh, I don't have sufficient purity to chant his holy names. They don't think in those ways. Whereas for performance of karma yoga and other such yogas, there are qualifications in terms of there is a right time. Like even now, if you go to, I mean, I'm sure it must be there in North India also. But even now in South India, you see, there is Rahu Kala, there is Yamaganda, there is, Kuliga, many such kinds of inauspicious times at which you don't do auspicious things. You know, Rahu Kala, if you have to go to an interview or if you have to go somewhere to do some important thing, you cannot leave at a time which is Rahu Kala, which means it is inauspicious. But for performing devotional activities, there is no such auspicious time. Any time, any place, there is no consideration of purity. Tatrarpita niyamita smaranena kalaha. So, therefore, satatam means without considering that whether a particular time, place, person or purity, without any of those considerations. That is the meaning of satatam. Satatam does not mean every single second he or she should be engaged in devotional activities. That's not what it means. The Smriti says, Nadesha niyamastatra nakala niyamastata na uchishtadav nishedosti Shri Harer namni lubdaka. For one eager for the name of Hari, there are no restrictions of time, place or impurity. So which means there is no reason for someone to stop performing devotional activity. Even though at particular inauspicious times you are not supposed to perform some aspects of karma. But there is no such disturbances. So which means a devotee does not think that a particular time is unfit or a particular place is unfit or a particular person is unfit to perform devotional service. Like today I was having a discussion with one of the devotees. Okay. And the discussion was, should within ISKCON, people who have, who are gays or who have homosexual tendencies, should they be given initiation or not? I said, why not? Because is there any Shastric injunction which says that such personalities cannot be initiated? Just like just because someone is attracted to the opposite sex, Does it make it a transcendental desire? It is also a material desire only. Ultimately, that has to be given up. See, due to certain karmic reasons, if someone is attracted to the same sex, okay, we are not encouraging it. But what will they do? Someone is getting attracted to the opposite sex, someone is getting attracted to the same sex. Ultimately, both are a desire to enjoy this material world only. So why should they not be given initiation? So the point is, of course, we have to hear, we have to actually consider social sensitivity. You know, we have to be sensitive. So if such people are given, you know, ordinary people may get discouraged. So from an institutional point of view, how do it? That's a different thing. But in terms of Siddhanta, should they not be encouraged in devotional service? What is wrong? Otherwise, how will they overcome their conditions? So ultimately, it is a relationship between the guru and the disciple. It is a relationship between the guru and the disciple. The guru takes responsibility of the disciple. Yes, I am aware of your conditionings. I am still willing to take you under my wings, and I will ensure that you overcome your conditionings and eventually perfect spiritual life. So why should other people have a problem? Why should other people have a problem? So therefore, there is no consideration of Striyo Vaishas Tata Shudras Tepi Anti Parambati. Anyone can. Devai Vidanti Ati Taranti Cha Deva Maya. So therefore, there is no restrictions in terms of time, place or impurity. So he says, just as poor householders strive for money at the door of a wealthy man in order to support their families, my devotees seek out the assembly of devotees in order to obtain devotional process like chanting. So why do poor householders strive for money at the door of a wealthy man? Because they need money to support their life, the life of themselves and the life of their family. So why do the devotees seek out the assembly of devotees? Because they know that my spiritual sustenance is dependent on the association of devotees. Okay, that is the meaning of yatanta. So this is another aspect. Again, same thing which we had discussed before. The point is that if someone has faith in the forms of worship or some aspects of devotional life, but they do not have respect towards the Vaishnavas, then that kind of faith is not proper faith in devotional service. That is why satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridavrata. So along with shravan kirtan smaranam etc., there must be a very clear endeavor to aspire for the association of devotees. So in this context, I will just add one point. So oftentimes we hear that who is a prakrita bhakta or a kanishta adhikari, we say that, oh, they respect the deities, but they don't respect the devotees. So there is respect of deities, but there is no respect of devotees. Oftentimes, this is how it is defined. But this is a very rudimentary definition. And this can be quite misleading, actually. This can be quite misleading. Because I will ask you a question. How many of you have seen pujaris in temple who take care, ISKCON temple, who take care of deities, but they are quite rude and disrespectful. Have you ever had this kind of an experience? You can raise your hands. None? No one has had this experience? I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, not that they come and assault you, but generally they are very rude, you know. You know, they may have a nature of being very rude. So, actually, how many of you have seen devotees who are rude and disrespectful? Not necessarily devotees, not necessarily pujaris, any devotee, you can please raise your hands. Somewhat disrespectful, not like they, you know. So, actually, we have to understand, it is not that, it is not that, this is a very rudimentary definition which says, oh, they respect the deities, but they don't respect the devotees. That's a very rudimentary definition. The actual meaning of that is that it is not the respect itself, because respectful or disrespectful nature comes from respect comes from one's swabhava. Okay. One may be by nature a very respectful person, or someone may be in whom rajogun may be a little bit more strong, they may be a little bit disrespectful. Okay. So respect itself comes from swabhava. Okay. So what defines a madhyamadhikari? So you can have a kanishtadhikari who is extremely respectful, and you may have a madhyamadhikari who is very disrespectful. How many of you have seen non-devotees more respectful than devotees? Please raise your hands. Have you ever observed? Only two of you have observed non-devotees more respectful than devotees, right? So many of you. So does it mean that the non-devotee is a madhyamadhikari and the devotee is a kanishtadhikari? No. So it is not talking about respect. It is talking about the differential respect. Okay. So someone may have very low sense of respect. You know, their conditioning, they may be by nature disrespectful people. Okay. So let's say they give 10 units of respect to non-devotees, but they may give 20 units of respect to devotees. So there is a 10 unit differential between how they treat devotees and non-devotees. So this differential is what defines, makes that they are actually madhyamadhikaris. Whereas a kanishtadhikari, you may have a very respectful kanishtadhikari. What he will do? He will give 90 units of respect to devotees. Whereas this devotee is giving only 20 units of respect. But what they will do? They will give 90 units of respect to non-devotees also. So the differential is zero. So therefore, these people, they would not do yatantaha. They would not try to search for association of devotees, because they don't see devotees as being anything extraordinary. So when we say that are kanishtadhikaris disrespectful and madhyamadhikaris respectful? Not necessarily. Okay, not necessarily. What differentiates a kanishtadhikari from a madhyamadhikari is actually this differential. Okay, Are they willing to put the devotees at least on a slightly higher pedestal than non-devotees? So if they are able to put the devotees slightly on a higher pedestal, then he is a Madhyamadhikari. Even though the person by nature may be disrespectful. But a very respectful person, if he is giving the exact same respect that he gives to a non-devotee, to a devotee, then he is a Kanishadhikari. So it is not the absolute respect that is given. It is what differentiates a Kanishadhikari from a Madhyamadhikari is the respect differential that is seen between what he gives to a devotee and a non-devotee. Okay. And because he puts the devotee on a higher pedestal, therefore, yatantaha, he is searching for the association of devotees. Okay. So, that should be understood. Yatanti. He seeks out the assembly of devotees. Why he seeks out assembly of devotees? Because he respects them and values them more than ordinary people. Otherwise, he will just be looking out for generic friends. He would not be looking out for devotees. The very fact that he is looking out for devotees means he respects them more. Okay. So, attaining that, they repeatedly recite the scriptures teaching bhakti. So, satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridavrataha yatantaha. Yatantaha means endeavoring. So, and kirtayantaha, attaining that they repeatedly recite the scriptures teaching bhakti. So, they recite which scriptures? Those scriptures which teach bhakti. They recite those scriptures. And they have very strict rules for themselves. Dridavrataha. Thinking, I must do this number of chanting, this many obeisances, this much service, like that. So that is Dridavrata. And they offer their obeisances. Namasyantascha. The word cha indicates that they also perform all the other processes of bhakti, such as hearing and serving the lotus feet, which are not mentioned in this verse. There are 64 limbs mentioned in Bhakti Rasam Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. They engage in all those activities. Nitya Yuktaha. Nitya Yuktaha means they desire to be in eternal association with me. It's a desire. There is a rule that desire can be expressed by the past tense. Okay. Some grammatical rule. Here the past tense expresses the present condition of desiring. Okay. So, singing about me, they worship me. Kirtayanto maam. Satatam kirtayanto maam. Yatantascha dadabrataha. Namasyantascha maam bhaktya. Nitya yukta upasate. Upasate. They worship me. This parallel construction indicates that the singing and other acts are their form of worship. Thus, there is no fault in repetition of the word maam. So the word maam comes twice in this verse. Satatam kirtayanto maam yatantascha jalabrataha namasyantascha maam bhaktya nityayukta upasate. Okay, like that. So that is the explanation of this verse, where he talks about that is the meaning of what does it mean to worship me? Bhajante. Bhajanti ananya manaso. What is bhajanti ananya manaso? This is what it means. Okay. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions based on whatever we have discussed in this particular verse? Any quick discussion points, comments, questions? Interesting. I thought there would be some questions in this particular verse. Okay, because we have discussed so many concepts, we have discussed. Okay, no problem. Let us continue. Okay, so this is about pure devotional service. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridabrataha namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Like that. So, now, in the next verse, he says, but not everyone may worship Krishna with this kind of pure devotional faith. Someone may not have this pure devotional faith. So, some people may worship Krishna with not so pure devotional faith. So, that is described here. He says, Jnana yajnena chapyanye yajanto mam upasate ekatvena prutakvena bahudha vishvato mukam. Anye, others, mam upasate, worship me. The previous verse he said, in the previous verse he said, in the 9.13 only he said, bhajanti ananya manaso. Some people worship me with without distractions. But not everyone worships Krishna without distractions. Some people may worship Krishna with distractions. So, therefore, he says here, talking about them, anye, other people, mam upasate, they worship me, but not ananya manaso, jnana yajyena yajantaha, through knowledge sacrifices. Jnana yajyena, knowledge sacrifices. Okay. So, and there are three types of jnana yajya. Okay. Three types of jnana yajya. What is that? Ekatvena, prithakvena, bahudha vishvato mukam. Ekatvena means thinking of themselves as non-different from me. So the first type is called as ahangropasana. Okay, ahangropasana means you identify with the deity that you are worshipping. You identify with the deity that you are worshipping. So, according to ahangropasana, you cannot worship a deity properly unless you identify with it. This is a kind of weird, even though it is recommended in the scriptures, but it is not a proper form of worship actually. We will discuss about it a little more. So this is called as ekatvena. Ekatvena means thinking of themselves as non-different from me. For the purpose of worship, not in the absolute sense. Okay. So, and the second type is called as prutakvena, worshipping me in many different forms. This is called as pratikopasana. Okay. Thinking of the demigods as the limb of the various limbs of the Supreme Lord. This is called as pratikopasana. The third is called as Bahudha Vishvato Mukham, worshipping me as the universe in many ways. So this is called as Vishwarupa Upasana. So these are indirect ways of worshipping the Lord. Indirect ways. There is direct way, there is indirect way, and there is improper way. Krishna, when he talks about demigod worship, he calls it avidhi purvakam. This is improper. This is not the right way of worshipping me. Yepi anya devata bhaktya yajante shrutayanvita tepi mameva kunteya yajante avidhi purvakam. So Krishna says, those who worship the devatas, they are also worshipping me. But it is avidhi purvakam. This is not the right form of worship, he says. very clearly. So, so this is, but so that is improper worship. But these three are indirect forms of worship, worshipping Krishna. Indirect forms of worshipping Krishna. There are improper ways is demigod worship. Okay. And the direct way is, you know, pure devotional service. Okay. So now he says, thus, he says, thus, in this chapter and the previous chapter, the Ananya Bhakta, also called as the Mahatma, is shown to be superior to the other devotees, such as those who approaches the Lord to rid himself of suffering. Artho Artharthi Jigyasa Jnani Cha Bhartarishabha. So the Ananya Bhakta or a pure devotee is established to be superior. So it is, he is established to be superior to you know, those who have material, those who approach the Supreme Lord with material desires. Now, the Lord shows three other types of devotees who have not been mentioned previously, who are inferior to the previously mentioned ones. Okay. So now, topmost are pure devotees, those who practice pure devotional service. Second are those who practice mixed devotional service, but which involves direct worship of direct worship but impure goals. This is direct worship and pure goals. This is better. And even worse than mixed devotional service is this Jnana Yajna worship. This is indirect worship and impure goals. This is even lower in the pecking order. Pure devotional service is Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. Okay. Mixed devotional services, at least there is direct worship of Krishna. But even though the, you know, there may be, it may be mixed with jnana, karma, etc. But when it comes to worship, the worship is direct. But in this case, the worship is also indirect. It is not direct deity form worship. So they are considered to be even more inferior. So he says, now the Lord shows three other types of devotees who have not been mentioned previously, who are inferior to the previously mentioned ones. So the previously mentioned ones are 7.15, right? Is it 7.15, which is Chaturvidha Bhajantema? Is it 7.15? Okay. Yeah. So he says, so those who worship themselves, this is Ahangropasana. Those who worship Pratika or secondary form, this is Pratika Upasana. And those who worship the Vishwarupa, this is Vishwarupa Upasana. Okay. So Madhusudan Saraswati explains the verse as follows. These others are unable to practice the sadhana of the Mahatma mentioned previously. Because they don't have sufficient Sukriti, so they cannot perform the worship of the Mahatma, as mentioned before. So, they worship by the sacrifice of knowledge mentioned in the Shruti in this way. What do they say? Tvamva aham asmi, bhagavo devate aham vai tvam asi. O Lord, I am you and you are I, says the Varaha Upanishad. Oh, sorry, 7.16, Chaturvidha Bhajantema. 7.15 is Namam Dushkritino Muda. Correct. Yes. So they worship by the sacrifice of knowledge mentioned in the Shruti in this way. Tvam va aham asmi bhagavo devate aham vai tvam asi. O Lord, I am you and you are I. So this is called as Ahangropasana. So they worship solely by a process of knowledge in which they identify themselves with God. Only for the purpose of worship. This is a very strange worship. I don't understand this Ahangropasana. But it is a kind of recommended worship. It is not exactly Mayavad. It is not exactly Mayavad. But it is certainly nowhere close to pure devotional practice. Okay. So thus it is called as Jnana Yajna. Cha means only, and api indicates that they give up other practices. Thus the meaning is, some, not desiring any other form of sadhana, worship me through the sacrifice of knowledge, denying difference simply by contemplating the non-difference of the worshipper and the object of worship. This is called as ekatvena. You are I and I am you. We are not two persons, we are only one. Okay. So these are the best of the three types. Of course, this is the Madhusudan Saraswati's opinion, not the Vaishnava philosophy. This is how Madhusudan Saraswati explains. Madhusudan Saraswati is actually coming in the line of Shankaracharya. So according to him, the Ahangropasaka is the best amongst the three. But this is not accepted by the Vaishnavacharyas. According to the Vaishnavacharyas, they are the worst. Okay. So, inferior to this type are others who, thinking of difference, prithaktvena, between the worshipper and the object of worship, they worship me through sacrifice of knowledge in different external forms, devatas, representing the Lord, according to the Shruti statement such as, Adityo Brahmeti Adeshaha. The sun is Brahman. This is the instruction. The Chandogya Upanishad says. So, they accept the devatas as various manifestations of the Supreme Lord only. This is called as Pratikopasana. And others who are inferior to that and are unable to worship either in non-difference or difference, worship me as the soul of all, Vishvatavamukam, Vishwarup, by many methods. Okay. So, of course, this hierarchy is the opinion of Madhusudan Saraswati. Our Vaishnavacharyas do not accept this conclusion, this hierarchy. But all these three are inferior forms of worship. One is Ahangropasana, where the worshipper identifies with the deity. So somehow in this Ahangropasana, it is mentioned that when you identify with the deity, then you can worship the deity with full inspiration. I mean, this has nothing to do with devotion. It is, you know, when you identify with the deity, then you can worship it perfectly. What is that rationale? I do not know. You know, it's very difficult to understand their rationale. Okay. I never could understand this Ahangropasana exactly properly. So then there is Pratikopasana, where you consider the forms of the demigods as manifestations of the Supreme Lord only. So, therefore, you may worship some forms of the demigods. But this is not the traditional demigod worship, where you consider them to be independent. So, here definitely there is an understanding of the dependence. So, they do not consider them to be independent. So, definitely they consider the demigods to be dependent, but they worship the forms of demigods. This is called as Pratikopasana. And the third is called as Vishwarupa Upasana. Worshipping the universal form. According to the tantric idea, one who does not identify with the deva cannot worship that deva. Na devo devam archayet. So this is the tantric idea. So that is why the first Ahangropasana is mentioned. So such worship in which one thinks I am Gopal is called as Ahangropasana. The worship of the vibhutis of the Lord, taking one and worshipping separately, is called as Pratikopasana. So what is this Pratikopasana? In such a worship, the person thinks, the Supreme Lord Vishnu is non-different from the sun. He is non-different from Indra. He is non-different from Soma. because they are all his vibhutis. Okay. So, therefore, he may worship the form of Indra, the form of Soma, the form of Surya, like that. So, this is called as Pratikopasana. These are the three types of Jnana Yajna. So, this is one understanding. Or, the meaning of Ekatvena Pratakvena can mean that the two states, I am Gopal, that is oneness, and I am the servant of Gopal, the difference, are simultaneously contemplated by one person, just like the river going to the ocean is different and non-different from the ocean. So, this is one kind of meditation. I am simultaneously different from, I am Gopal and I am the servant of Gopal. So, there is simultaneous meditation of oneness and difference. Okay. So, this is another explanation of Ekatvena Pratakvena. So, in that case, there are only two types of Jnana Yajna. Okay. And of course, Vishvatava Mukham is worshipping the Vishwarupa. Okay. Like that. So, this is what is described here. Those who do not have that faith in Bhajanti Ananya Manaso, worshipping Krishna without any distraction, so they may worship Krishna through these kind of Jnana Yajna or indirect ways. Ekatvena Pratakvena Bahuda Vishvatomukam. Ekatvena indicates Ahangropasana, Pratakvena indicates Pratikopasana, and Vishvatomukam indicates the Vishwarupa Upasana. So these are the indirect ways which are even lesser than the mixed devotional service. So at, because in mixed devotional service, at least whenever it comes to worship, the worship is direct. But here, the worship is also indirect. So therefore, it is called as, so these three types of worships are inferior even to mixed devotional service. Okay. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share? Ask. Yes, Keshav Premataji.
Prabhuji, what is the connection of this shloka, Prabhuji? Why is that Krishna speaking here? What is that we should understand from this, Prabhuji? Like, previous shloka is speaking about pure devotional service now, Prabhuji.
Yes.
So, what is this connection? Why is this shloka? What is that he is talking here, Prabhuji?
There are also people who may not worship with Ananya Manasa. And how does their worship look like? So, he is describing it here. So, sometimes you may see some forms of worship, but they are not pure worship. So, you may see someone performing Ahangropasana, even though that involves some kind of worship. Or you may see someone worshipping some different forms of devatas. This is considering them to be, you know, some vibhuti of the Lord. This is Pratikopasana. So, wherever Upasana is involved or bhajan is involved, it is not necessarily pure devotional service. There are other forms of indirect, impure forms of worship also. And amongst those indirect, impure forms of worship, you know, these are some of the forms that is mentioned here.
But they are worshipping Krishna only, these people also.
Indirectly, indirectly.
Directly. Oh. And that 716 Prabhuji, they are still better than them, these people, is it, Prabhuji?
Oh, like, they are much better. At least they directly worship Krishna.
Oh. They'll be worshipping us like us, Prabhuji, those 716.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll be worshipping like us, but they may be asking for some material.
Yeah, Prabhuji. Things. Okay, Prabhuji, I got it. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Shiva Kumar Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Prabhu, one question, Prabhu. Well, it's known that the demigod worshipping is generally for some material aspiration or benefits. Is there any insight, Prabhu, as to, is there any some element of pure devotion to demigods also exhibited? Would that help in them coming to Krishna through that journey itself?
Yeah, if someone is approaching the demigod, there is generally it is not seen.
Mm.
generally it is not seen. So
Mm-hmm.
if someone neutrally approaches the demigods, the demigods being Vaishnavas, they generally direct them to Krishna. So, but generally it is not seen that one approaches a demigod without any material desire. Generally it is not seen.
Because I am speaking from my personal experience also, Prabhu. My background is predominantly Saivite, Prabhu, and I understand it's predominantly some material aspirations and things like that. But I don't know. I mean, I also have an opinion that there is at least some element of some devotion in it. But without such background, somehow I came into Krishna Bhakti and I have picked up. And so I'm just thinking how those people kind of, in my background, people kind of, how do they progress towards Krishna is what the background of the question.
They can progress towards Krishna only if by chance they come in touch with devotees of Krishna. That is the only way they can come. So, the second canto it is mentioned that etavan eva yajatam iha nishreyasodayah bhagavati achalo bhavo yad bhagavata sangat. So he says that etavan eva yajatam, all these other kinds of worshippers, iha nishreyasodayah, they can achieve ultimate auspiciousness. What is that auspiciousness? Bhagavati achalo bhavo, an undeviated attachment to Krishna. How? Yet Bhagavata Sangata, only by the association of the other Bhagavatas or devotees, only then it is possible. Otherwise, not possible.
Okay. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Yashoda Gopika Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Prabhuji, while mentioning about Ekatvena, you did mention that attachment to a specific deity is considered impure or inferior. I mean, I just want to understand that.
Attachment to
a specific deity form means, is it wrong to follow a particular deity as well?
No.
One particular deity of Krishna, like if I follow Radha Raman,
that has nothing to do with Ekatvena. That is Ahangro Upasana is a totally different thing. It has one can that Ahangro Upasana means you are identifying with the deity. You are worshipping Radha Raman, but you don't think you are Radha Raman.
Yeah. I thought that maybe Ahangra attachment to a specific deity is...
No. That is not Ahangra Upasana.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, there are some questions in the chat box. What is the difference between Ahangra Upasana and Mayavad? Well, it sounds very similar, but it is not Mayavad because it is a proper Shastric recommended this thing. In the Tantra Shastra, this kind of Ahangropasana is mentioned. But this is the way it is stated by our Acharyas, it looks more like a convenience rather than actually they don't literally think that, you know, I am non-different from the deity. But for some reason, they identify with the deity. Probably it's just a temporary identification and not complete. But beyond that, I do not know the details. But certainly, one thing I know is Ahangra Upasana is not Mayavad, even though it sounds like that. But from a pure devotional perspective, this is very offensive. That much I can tell. That is mentioned. Because it is mentioned that those who perform Vaishnava Aparad, they eventually degrade themselves to become Ahangropasakas. That kind of a description is there. When they commit serious Vaishnava Aparad, they will become Ahangropasakas, like that. So it's not a very honorable form of worship, but it is not Mayavad, that much I can tell. Okay, there is another question. Why Gayatri Mantra, which is directed to the sun, is practiced in ISKCON? Well, in ISKCON, Gayatri Mantra, the Gayatri Mantra is not a glorification of sun. It is a glorification of the Supreme Lord, who is the controller of the sun. And apart from that one Gayatri Mantra, there are six other Gayatri Mantras which are given to worship the you know, the worshipable deities, Guru, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna, Radha Krishna, you know, to worship all of them. So even the first Gayatri mantra is not a glorification, is not directed to sun, it is directed to the Supreme Lord who is the controller of the sun. Like that. Okay. If there are no further discussion points, comments or questions, let us move forward. So this talks about, this previous verse spoke about the three types of Jnana Yajna. So now, okay, the next verse is three verses together and it has a long purport also. I don't think I will have time to complete it. So let us just pause here. And because by, oh, this is four verses together, 16, 17, 18, 19. So let us not start this verse right now. We will take it next Friday. So next Friday we will have class. After that, for two Fridays, we won't have class. I think, yeah, two Fridays, right? Yeah. After that, for two Fridays, we won't have sessions because it will be Kartik break. So next 1 week, we will, next Friday, we will definitely have the session, Bhagavad Gita session. So thank you very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. We will pause here and continue this discussion next Friday. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.